hello everyone. Welcome you all to Drive to HR. And this is your host, Nisha, and we have Crystal Miller joining with us today to guest host with me. And we have a wonderful guest. He is joining with us from London. And to talk about him, he's a wonderful person. He is an HR professional, of course, an artist, a musician, and most of all, a man who is known for his kindness and politeness. Derek Sherrill, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Crumbs, I thank you. I don't really know what to say. I'd like to frame that. Thank you. Could you write it down for me? Let me assure you that nobody over here is as nice to me as you folks are, so that's great. I really appreciate such a warm, lovely welcome, and it's great to be here again. And a belated Happy New Year to you and to all your listeners.
Thank you so much. All right, so let's kick off the show. Doug, if there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, we would really, really appreciate if you can kick off the show by giving them a brief intro of who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there's lots of people out there who don't know who I am. I'm just one of the many billions of human beings on this planet. My name is Doug. I run a small consultancy practice which works out of the UK and across Europe and occasionally in the USA called What Goes Around. You can find me on most social networks. I'm on Twitter at DougShaw1. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn. And I blog at Stop Doing Dumb Things to Customers. And the kind of things that I'm interested in are improving the customer experience through empowered employees. So I think HR has a really powerful role to play there. I'm fascinated in the role that art has to play in and around work, and I've got a really project that I love to play around with in that space. I'm a big fan of networks and how do we use those to our sort of collective advantage. And something else that I'm starting to experiment with more and more is well-being and how that affects me, how that affects my clients. I do some consultation and facilitation around business improvement as well. I suppose that's what pays the bills, and all the other things I mentioned are the things that kind of really excite me and I really love to do. I'm very fortunate that my work is very exciting and very varied, and I have a lot of lovely clients to share it with, so a very grateful guy.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that you really love to do, and there's a couple of things that really stick out for me. I can't wait to talk to you about well-being, but I'm going to start with art. Is that okay? Fabulous. Okay, so tell me about the very cool project that you're doing with art right now and how that relates to HR.
Okay. Well, my work, I do a lot of work with HR people. I do a lot of work with people across businesses as well. So most of what I'm going to talk to you about, although I think is relevant for HR, is relevant for lots of other people in the world of business. I have a personal interest in art. I enjoy doodling and sketching. I'm not particularly good at it, but I'm fascinated by it, and it's just something that I like to do to kind of, you know, lose myself. It's one of those little hobbies I like to enjoy. And I really began to find just interesting connections between the doodling and sketching I started to do and how I was feeling and thinking about work. And I would find that at a very basic level, you know, I could use artistic methods to come up with different ways of solving problems. So rather than just trying to write down the answer to something, I found if I would try and draw the answer to something or even just draw how I was feeling about something, I would start to get very different responses from myself. I began to infuse some of this work into my general work about 3 years ago. And then a couple of years ago, I decided to pull it together as a separate and distinct project, if you like, which I chose to call Art for Work's Sake. And since then, I've taken it, you know, all over the world. I've been to several HR and workplace conferences in Europe and in the USA, and I've got hundreds of people, literally hundreds of people across the world, drawing and using other artistic methods like storytelling, a bit of improv, some poetry, all with a view to improving work. So it's just another method. You know, I'm not saying that writing down things is not a good idea. It is. I mean, words are an art form themselves. But what I've just begun to realize is that when we open our minds to other ways of thinking, then, you know, you won't be surprised to learn that we attract all kinds of different thoughts and ideas into our head. We can go quite deep emotionally with some people if they want to. But I use this stuff for helping people to kind of set a strategy, set visions and goals, think about the future for their profession, just think about the future for themselves. It's a really interesting and encouraging field to be working in, and it really amazes me the kind of responses it can unlock in some people. It's a very powerful tool.
So I hear you, and my mother's an artist, so I agree with you. I've seen it in my life growing up and in her work. I'm wondering, and I've actually been kind of batting this around for a few days now, is there a place for this or a space for art for work in terms of evaluating talent? Can you possibly find someone or help determine whether someone could fit your organization through an art project? And if so, how do you think that'd work?
Okay, well, that's a fascinating question. And I'm just pausing for a second to desperately try and dig through the recesses of my mind and see if I can come up with a helpful answer. Here's a thought. I guess to some extent it depends on the nature of the organization that's doing the attracting. But I think one of the things that we broadly we acknowledge in the world of work is that the concept of creativity, or at least the creative process, is something that's considered to be a very, very, very important thing to be able to understand and play with and develop. And yet I put it to you that many businesses are not particularly good at it. I think one of the reasons why is that often people associate creativity with chaos, whereas one of the things I believe very strongly is that actually it's a very highly nuanced field, and actually you can be quite mildly creative. You can constrain creativity to a certain extent. In fact, necessity is the mother of invention. So assuming we want our employees to understand the creative process, then I think it would be really interesting to see how potential colleagues would respond to creative invitations. So I'd need more time to think about it and develop the thinking, but I'd love to see if you had a potential bunch of new hires and you invited them to sketch a vision of the future for themselves and for the organization, I'd be fascinated to see what they could come up with.
Well, I think there's a lot of, like, to your point on the nuance, I think there's a lot of little things that could be gleaned from that, down to, like, what colors did they choose? Did it look like an angry painting or a happy painting? You know, this is such an elementary, literally an elementary example. But, you know, I was looking at this group of children's paintings, and it was really clear who the friends were in these groups, right? Because friends tended to have, like, very similar drawings, right? They used similar colors. They had similar shapes in their pictures. Some of the groups had similar themes. But then there'd be like this one kid, right? There's always that one kid that's like painting in black scribbles and it's very angry. And, you know, and that may be exactly what that team needs. But if you're looking for something for cohesiveness, you know, maybe you don't want the kid that's grabbing all of the browns and the sharp lines if everybody else is blues and fuzzy round shapes. I don't know. But it was fascinating to me.
Yeah, well, I think it's an interesting question. I certainly think you'd need to be very careful how you considered how much weight you put on the decisions you made based on those kind of experiments, if you like.
I would think it's talking points, right?
Yeah, indeed. But if we accept that understanding the creative process is important, and you know there aren't many folk in the world of business who would disagree with that, then I think trying to see how we could encourage people to play with it usefully as part of the selection process, I think that could be an interesting thing to do. I'd caution anybody putting too much weight behind it and indeed any one hiring factor. But I think it could be a fun thing to think about and try to develop. That's for sure.
Doodles for assessments. I think we may have found like a 2016 thing. I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe.
But okay. Maybe not. But anyway, all right, cool. So what do you do with art for work at conferences? What does that look like?
Well, it works best when there's lots of space to play. So I was very fortunate. A lovely friend of mine, a chap by the name of Joe Gerstand, agreed to partner with me in Illinois last year. And with the help of the conference organizers, Julie and Sabrina, we ran a pre-conference workshop over there for just over 100 people. And we had a huge room. And rather than sit people down in rows and just have them listening to Joe and I talking, what we actually did was we did not much talking, just, set the scene. And then we just kind of unleashed a bunch of participatory artistic experiments, and we did some pencil drawing, we did some colors, we did storytelling, we did improvisation, we did some poetry, we did a whole load of things, just to think about, how do we respond to different situations at work, how do we think about vision for the future. So we did some storytelling and drawings together around visions of the future, and actually I think I've got some of the results of that up on my Flickr photo stream. So it's a different offer for a conference, because it requires people to get up out of their seat. It requires them to actively participate. And I think one of the challenges that I think not just the HR profession but I think the world of work has is how do we make continuous professional development a genuinely engaging prospect? So people like going to conferences, and very often we'll learn some cool stuff while we're there, but you persistently and regularly hear that actually very often the real gems is the networking and the stuff that goes on in between. And that's fine, but I think, I think we need to think as a profession, how do we make continuous professional development more engaging? And so I think the more ways that we can interact and engage with each other at events like that, then I think the more stimulating that is likely to be, both in the moment and also when we get back to work. So from that point of view, I'm biased, but I think it's a really helpful tool from that perspective.
So why can't we bring that back into the workplace would be the question that I have. So I mean, if conferences are a place where we get recharged, and these networking events are such a gem because we're able to get out of our headspace, our normal headspace at work, and talk with people who have different opinions and backgrounds and whatnot. Why can't we do something like that at the office?
Well, I think it depends on what you mean by something like that, but I think we can.
Oh, why can't we get out of our work, and network with other people within the organizations? Can organizations put together things like that internally?
Yeah, sure. And I help them with that kind of thing. So I don't just – it isn't just something I run at conferences. I actually I work these things through with clients. But I think one of the things I think that it fascinates me about the world of work that I think we've lost our way with is that we get so fascinated and so excited about the kind of grand vision and the big goal that we're all kind of heading to, that we forget the importance and significance of the small things that all the little things that go to make work better, and I think we undervalue them. So I think one of the things that I try to encourage, both in the sort of artistic elements of my work, but in the more traditional kind of consulting practice as well, is that small things make a big difference. So how we take this stuff back to work, I think, is in small, tiny chunks. We don't go and try and completely reinvigorate and reevaluate everything we're doing. It's a bit like the guy who comes up with 10 epic New Year's resolutions is probably going to have failed on them all by the 7th of January. Whereas somebody who maybe chooses, two or three small things that they are confident that they can manage, can weave those things into their life. And actually, do you know what? For the first couple of weeks, maybe even months, they might not notice much difference at all. But as time goes by, you start to see things impacting your own life differently, and the way you interact with other people differently, and therefore how you work together. So I think the way to do these things is incrementally. Don't come away thinking I can you know, I can sort of wave my magic HR wand and change the world. What are the small things I can take back and do on a repeated basis that over time will make a big difference?
So it's not that my batteries are on. Got it.
Well, you know, and let's face it, I'm wrong often too. So, you know, but it works for me, and it works for a lot of people that I know and work with.
Well, one question that I have when it comes to art and people, we have seen that, Doug, you were using some of your artistic abilities when it comes to team building activities. So how do you think, you know, art helps when it comes to building a culture of collaboration in the workplace?
Good question. I think one of the things that I find really powerful to play with is the concept of trying to suspend judgment. So there's nothing that will kill an idea quicker than everybody else telling me my idea is a whole load of rubbish. And there's nothing that will, you know, kill that whole kind of team vibe off quicker than ganging up on somebody in the team or just kind of passing judgment on everybody's work all the time. So I think that we are typically very vulnerable when it comes to sharing our artistic experience. You know, when we're kids, we all love to draw and paint. And there's some really lovely there's a really lovely story in Orbiting the Giant Hairball by Gordon Mackenzie, how he experiences working with children, and the older they get, the less artistic they get. Brené Brown talks about this in her studies around vulnerability as well. So it's a sensitive area to go into. So some of the things I do, first of all, is to try and create the time and space and agreement that we're going to suspend our judgment, you know, in the initial phases of this work. And I have a few exercises that I often use to help people with that. But it's a great way to, you know, show our more kind of wholehearted selves, if you like. And I think more and more the world of work is looking for, you know, the human element of human resources and less, you know, less about the resources and more about the human. So I think if you're looking to create cohesive and coherent teams, getting to know each other better and understanding, you know, what motivates us and being more kind of coaching with each other, if you like. So in the, you know, in days gone by, we were expected to just be told what to do and get on with it, and work was very coercive. I think that better work nowadays is much more coactive. In other words, we're trying to figure things out with each other, for each other. You can read, if anyone's interested, there's an American lady by the name of Mary Parker Follett, who sadly is no longer with us. I think she died in the 1930s. But she was a really early proponent of collaborative, coactive working. Really smart American woman, and really a long way ahead of her field. And she recognized that coactive work is much more liberating than coercive work, and that you need to be able to suspend judgment and you need coherent teams to make that kind of thing work. The other thing that she had a real downer on was micromanagement. I think she's a great person to, I can say follow. I mean, you can't really follow her because she's no longer with us, but she's written some excellent stuff that stood the test of time, and she's worth checking out because I think some of her beliefs are very powerful. And I think that some of the artistic practice that I use supports those kind of beliefs and helps us suspend judgment and understand the power of you know, power with each other rather than power over each other.
And what was her name again?
The lady's name is Mary Parker Follett, and she was around. She died in the 1930s. Very smart American woman. Lot of time for her thinking.
That's fantastic. So, would you like to talk a little bit about your well-being and projects and what you're doing with the work surrounding that?
Yeah, this is another. You know, it's an experiment. It's born out of conversations online and offline with with a few people. I'm lucky that I talk to John Sumser and Heather Bussing from time to time, and we've kicked around a few ideas in the well-being space. You know, I think it's one of these things that it's really important for me, for anybody, and for the corporation and the company to have healthy, switched on, alert, alive, awake employees. But I'm not quite sure what the best way of necessarily what the best way of achieving that kind of thing is. So I figured that I would conduct a series of experiments on myself, if you like, to see what I could learn. And the first one was inspired by John Hudson, a friend in Chicago, who made a suggestion online that people that we might like to take part in something called, I think it was called the Runner's Week Streak. Now, it didn't mean take all your clothes off and run down the street. It wasn't that kind of streak. It was an opportunity to exercise every day from Thanksgiving through to and including New Year's Day. And the idea was we were supposed to run a mile a day. Well, my knees aren't great, so I said, hey, I'm in, but I'll walk, if that's okay. And a few of us got involved. So there was John Hudson, Brock Edwards, Dominique Rogers, and myself. Probably some others, but those are the ones that I can remember. And we went off and did our challenge. And by New Year's Day, I'd walked 111 miles. So that was great, whoopity-doo. But that also coincided with me getting a Fitbit for Christmas. I went from having to log all of these walks kind of manually, if you like, or using apps on my phone, to wearing this device that all of a sudden is starting to track my own exercise. And so I'm starting to gather data. It's become less hassle because I don't have to write it down and log it all. If I want to, I can input nutritional information into the Fitbit thing. And so I can kind of start to get a picture there of how I'm feeling and what's going on. I've also thrown into the mix, I'm playing with an app at the moment called Headspace. So for the first time in my life, I have started to meditate. And I know I've got some of my more cynical friends over here in the UK will be groaning when they think of me as some sort of tree-hugging hippie. But I think it's a really interesting space to go and something to play around with. Now, I've only been doing it for 10 days, but I take at least 10 minutes a day, and I'm just feeding that into my sort of well-being experiment to see, you know, what I can learn about myself, how does it make me feel. I'm also doing something called 100 Happy Days, which is a really simple, well, I thought it was a really simple challenge, and that was simply to take a photograph of something that's made me happy and share it every day for 100 days. It's a well-known, well-publicized project, and I'm conducting that at the moment. I think I'm on about day 56, and again, I'm just keen to see what effect that has on my general well-being by the time I get to the end of the process. So,
what have you noticed so far? 56 days in, that's a pretty fair bit in. So have you noticed anything thus
far? I've noticed that there are definitely days when I scratch around for something. I had a really bad cold over Christmas, and I did not feel particularly happy at all. But then I realized that actually, you know what, my cold and flu medication and my comfy slippers, they were the things that were making me happy at the time. So I think I realized that it's typically people more than things that make you happy. So I think what it's helped me do is it's begun to help me appreciate relationships more. It also really made it very clear to me that actually if you look for happiness, it's there. And also it's quite, it can be quite fleeting. So I don't believe that somebody can walk around in a permanent state of euphoria unless they're taking some kind of illegal substance or other. It's a fleeting, like all our emotions, it's a fleeting thing. So actually I don't try to kind of hold on to it. I'm very comfortable with letting it come and go. But it's definitely out there. And I would say probably I've got no data to back this up, but broadly speaking, I think I probably feel just generally a little better. And the other thing I really like about the photograph project is I've got this lovely collection of snaps that I can look back on and feel, you know, feel good about. So again, if I'm feeling a bit flat, I can flick through the book. I mean, not literally, although I have ordered the first 50 are coming in a book soon, so I will literally be able to flick through them. But yeah, you know, I think it's having a generally positive effect. But I don't want to. I'm not looking to conclude anything right now. This is a series of ongoing things. I'm going to do some DNA testing to see what I can learn about, you know, my own sort of genetic makeup and fold that into the mix. But I think well-being is a really important thing for HR and other people at work. And I just thought, you know, I need to do some work on myself because
I think one
of the things that, you know, we have to work on ourselves before we work on anybody else is something that increasingly and more powerfully I believe. So for me, it's just part of curiosity.
That's supposed to make sense. I got to jump in because we've got about 3 minutes left. And I
okay, sorry for going on so much.
No, you're fine. I'm just explaining why I'm being rude. So with the 3 minutes or so left that we have, you said something that reminded me of something that I read. And it was an HR book that basically said that we should look for happiness in the workplace and joy in our teammates. So don't look for your coworkers to make you happy. Look for your coworkers to bring you joy in what you can accomplish together. Look for the little things in your workplace to make you happy, like your chair or the window or the view from it. So
yeah,
that kind of coincides with what you're saying. Do you think that's spot on, or do you think that it's kind of not?
Well, here's a really neat. So I didn't know you were going to say that. But one of the funnest little exercises that we do in Art for Work's Sake is we invite the question, "What brings you joy?" And it's really powerful seeing how people connect work and life and all sorts of other things through that very simple question visually. So I definitely think there's something in there, and I think again, you know, that sort of sense links very neatly back to the whole well-being piece too. So I couldn't have paid you to tee that up any nicer. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, Doug, we have about 2 more minutes at this point.
Okay.
So it would be great to know what are your plans for 2015, your travel plans, the conferences that you are about to attend so people can come and meet you there.
Okay. Right. Well, my definite plan so far, I've got some kind of European leg of the tour worked out. So I'm going to be going to Lisbon in Portugal. I'm going to be going to Barcelona, and I'm going to be going to Madrid. I'm going to be in London, and I'm pretty certain I'm going to be in Manchester here in the UK later on in the year. I'm really hoping that I can get to an event I think it's in Dallas this year, called Summer Brand Camp. I'm doing some work behind the scenes on that. And one of my fave events is the Illinois Sherm. So, you know, I'd love to find a way to get there again this year too. Those plans are still emerging, but those are kind of my, if I could pick and choose, those would be amongst my favourites. But I keep a note of my sort of tour dates on the website. So as they get confirmed, I'll make sure and pop them up there.
Wonderful. Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining with us today, and it's always a pleasure having you on the show. And have a wonderful, wonderful 2015, and have a great weekend.
Hey, back to you, folks, and thanks again. It really is a pleasure for you to have me on here. It's something I get very excited about. Thanks ever so much.
Thanks, Crystal, and thanks, Doug, and thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in to Drive Through HR.
Take a break.
Are we done?
I'm a hot air balloon.
Yes, we are.
I could go to space.
Okay. This folks, it's lovely to
with the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.